All right, just a little bit of review. We've studied the rebellion, a couple of rebellions now. The rebellion of Absalom and then the rebellion of Sheba. We won't go through all that again. But just remember some of the names and the story, how it goes there, and some of the lessons that we've talked about from the life of David. Remember, we're following the chronology of the life of David, because he's the important character here, and all these other things that happen around him and to him, and are able to, sometimes as a result of the decisions that he's made. Tonight we're going to start in chapter 24, and we're going to bounce a little backwards and forwards as we go through the text here. So, we don't know exactly when this occurred. There's no indication of when it, of the time frame. So, we put it here toward the end. We're actually winding down in this section of the of David's life and his reign here in of Israel. And it came about that something happened. And we don't even know what that is. The scriptures don't tell us. The Lord doesn't tell us. But the Lord is angry with Israel for some reason. And he incites or allows David to be tempted. And over in 1 Chronicles, the same story is over in 1 Chronicles 21 as well. But what happens is David is tempted, and he starts a census. He commands that a census be taken and count to see how many, warriors, essentially, is the purpose of it, see how many soldiers they have. Now, what do we know about census and how they're taken and when they've been taken? When was the last census taken? Been a long time. All the way back to Exodus, right? You think back, there's really only been two that I can think of. In Exodus, when they arrived at Mount Sinai, there was a census taken then, right? And then, at the end, when they arrived there at Mount Sinai, I should say, before they left. And then at the end of the wandering. Remember when we studied that? What was the difference between the census taken before and after the wandering? What did it kind of show us? That generation had passed. That was the purpose of their punishment, right? For, the sin of the golden calf. So, or not the golden calf, but of the refusal to go into the land when God had ordered them. So, the census were taken then. How was that done? Whose idea was it to take those census? Census? That's right. Yeah, no. That's right. Yes, well, yeah, in those two senses, in both those occasions, God ordered those. God said, do this, and this is how you do it. And he gave some very specific instructions about it. When they did that, there was even a tax that was associated with it. They had to pay a half shekel, that they were to pay, and that was taken and put in the collection of the temple, the tabernacle, for worship and carrying on worship. And so on those occasions, God specified it and told them how to do it and what to do. Now, here we come all the way years and years and years later, and David is here, and David, from the scriptures here, this is not God's order. It's not God's idea to take this census. All right? So, when David makes the command and he tells his commanders, his go number Israel and Judah. He tells Joab, he tells the commanders, verse 2, go out through all the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba and register the people that I may know the number of the people. What was Joab's reaction to that command? Don't do this. You know, I honestly can't decide what to think about Joab. He gives great counsel to David, but then he does other things. I'm like, you know, so. But he counsels David here and he says, don't do this. Why does he say don't do this? Why does he counsel David against doing this? Verse 3, he says, may God, the Lord your God, add to the people 100 times as many as they are. You know, just add to 100 times more than however many we've got. Kind of saying, it doesn't matter how many we've got. You know, if we added 100 times more. While the eyes of my Lord the King still see, while you're alive. But why does my Lord the King delight in this thing? Why are you doing this? Well, that's a good question. And we don't know the answer to it. But nevertheless, the king's word, David's word went out, prevailed against Joab and against the commanders of the army. Joab didn't want to do this. His commanders didn't want to do this. But he insists, and they go out and do it. So they go over. They cross Jordan. They go up. They go around. They go, like David commanded, from Dan to Beersheba. Where's Dan? Very north. Beersheba, very south. They're numbering the whole land. And it takes them a long time. They go out, and it takes them like 9 months. Verse 8. 9 months and 20 days, so almost 10 months, it takes them to go out and carry this out. So Joab comes back, and he gives the number. And it's over 1 million. All right. And when David hears it, what's his reaction? When he knows the number and the job is complete, the order's been carried out, what is David's reaction and attitude? In verse 10, David's heart troubled him after he had numbered the people. And David said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. David knew this wasn't right, what he had done. He had sinned against God. I have sinned greatly in what I've done, but now, O Lord, please take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have acted very foolishly. So, what was wrong about David doing this? We'll think about that as we go along here. But that's the question on the table. What was wrong about that? How had David sinned? So, David arose, and he came to the Lord, and God sent a prophet to David. He sends him Gad. And the message from the prophet to David about this matter and about this sin that David had committed was, okay, David, you've got 3 choices. And here are your 3 choices. And he lays them out for him. Now, when I was a kid, and I was given a choice, I didn't like any of the options. One was as bad as the other. And in this case, David, one is as bad as the other. They're all very difficult to bear. And the choices were the punishment, the consequences of that sin, is in verse 13. All right? So his choices are, he could have years of famine, right? All over the land, or he could suffer 3 months fleeing from his enemies. Has David done that before? Yeah, he's done that before. He knows what that's like. And then the last one is 3 days of pestilence. Something happening, pestilence, you know, pretty broad spread, something. And so David doesn't like any of these options, but what does David not want to happen? He doesn't want to fall into whose hands? His enemy, yeah, the hands of men. He much prefers to be in the hands of God. And that God, so he wants to be stay in God's hands because he knows what about God. He's merciful. He can plead with God. When he's in the hands of his enemies or of men, you know, he doesn't have God necessarily. So David says to God, I am in great distress. Let us now fall into the hand of the Lord, for his mercies are great, but do not let me fall into the hand of man. So that's his choice. I'd rather be with you, God, in your hands than in men. So, in verse 15, the Lord sends the pestilence upon Israel, from morning until the appointed time. And it is quite horrific, the punishment that has suffered. 70,000 men of the people from Dan to Beersheba, all of Israel, Judah, all the territories. And the angel that God was sending to do this reached toward Jerusalem to destroy it. And God stopped him. God stopped the pestilence before it entered into Jerusalem. And the calamity that was being brought on the people, and he said, it's enough. Now relax your hand. And the angel was at the threshing floor of Ornan. And so that's specifically mentioned that that's where this pestilence stopped. So David speaks to the Lord and he asks him for mercy. And he says, you know, David says, behold, it is I who have sinned, and it is I who have done wrong. But these sheep, these people, what have they done? Please let your hand be against me and against my father's house. David preferred that he take the punishment for this rather than his people. Why would David prefer that? It was his fault, right? He's the one who had sinned. He felt guilty. And now on top of it, the result of it, the punishment, the consequences was affecting who? Everybody. You remember what we've talked about a couple of times already? What about the sphere of influence that David had and how, whether we like it or not, people of leadership, of influence, when they do wrong, it has more impact, doesn't it? And here's that case again with David as the leader, as the king, and he's done wrong. It affects so many people. So Gad comes, the prophet comes to David. God sends him to him. And he says, go and set up an altar to the Lord there at the threshing floor of Ornan. So that's where that pestilence had stopped. So David goes to Ornan's place, and he goes up to him, and just as Gad has told him, and he wants to buy the place. He wants to buy the threshing floor. He wants to buy that facility from Ornan. He's also called Arona. So Ornan looks. He saw the king coming, and he goes out, and he bows before the king. Very appropriate. He bows before the king, his king David, and he says, "Why have you come to the servant?" And David tells him to buy this threshing floor from you, so that I can build an altar and worship God here, so that the plague may be held back from the people. It was a very specific purpose for building an altar here and sacrificing, as the prophet has told him. So Ornan says to David, take the offer up what is good in your sight. Look, the oxen are here. The threshing floor is here. Build the altar, make the sacrifices, everything, I give to the king. And Ornan said, may the Lord your God accept you. So Ornan was willing and generous and was wanting to give this to David for him to carry out and do what, God has told him to do and the prophet. So, but David will not accept that. David will not take it from him for nothing. And David says in verse 24, no, but I will surely buy it from you for a price. I will not offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God, which cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor, he buys the oxen, he builds the altar there, and he makes the burnt offerings, offers those burnt offerings and peace offerings. And the Lord was moved by that, and the plague stopped and did not go further through the land. So the question back on the table is, what was David's sin? Can we identify it? I don't have it up there. The answer's not up there. Yeah. What could David have, what, knowing David, what could he have done? You go ahead before you answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in First Chronicles, it's very much, very clear that Satan tempted David to do this, right? So there was definitely something wrong about it, and I tend to agree with Jeff. There's nothing really. There's nothing. God had ordered the census before. God did not order this one. Now, think about what the census means. What's the purpose of taking the census, right? It's to find out how many you've got, all right? And wow, David had a lot. I mean, there was over 1 million, you know, men fighting from Israel and Judah that could fight. Now, why would somebody want to know that number? Did David need to know that number? All right, so the only reason, that's saying the only reason you need to know it is if you're going into battle to know the number. All right, take that for example. Did David ever need to know that even when he was going into battle? Right, exactly. Yes. He didn't need to know it. That's right. That's right. So that's kind of where I'm going with this idea. You have something? So what does that show a dependency on? He's depending on what? The numbers. Who is David dependent on seemingly most of his life? He really has. But in this instance, whatever the chronology is, I don't know when this occurred, you know, in his reign. But in this particular instance, what did it seem, and it seems like a sin of pride, perhaps. It could be, as Al is saying, a lack of faith, a lack of dependency on God. But he wanted to know the numbers. But as soon as David learned the number, what did he realize? I don't need to know this number. He was very sorry that he had done this. Even before God, according to the way it's read, before anybody came to him this time, you know, several times people had to come to David, you know, a couple of times, and tell David, hey, you know, you're the one here. But this time, he realized it, that he did not need to know this, and that what he had done was wrong. So, Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's right. And one of the things is, you know, going back to the other censuses, there was a reason for those. It seems like when you go back and look at Exodus, there was a reason for that. Here's the number before. And here's the number after, at least definitely for the second one. Here's, you know, and this is what was accomplished during that wandering in the wilderness. And that generation died just like God said was going to happen. In this case, there wasn't a reason. There wasn't any kind of faithful or godly reason to do this. Right? But it looked more like, and it was seemingly that David wanted to know this number for lack of faith, lack of dependency on God. What was one of the things that God had prohibited about battles, about gearing up for a battle? I'm phrasing it wrong. Yeah, you thought you know what I was thinking. God wouldn't let them multiply horses or raise horses for battles, would he? That was prohibited in their battles. What did all their enemies do? And they had horses and chariots and riders and cavalry and everything, right? God wouldn't let them do that. I think this is one of the reasons is so that they would be dependent on him. Because, you know, you have a a few dozen or a few hundred or a few thousand of horses, chariots, and all that, man, you can put a hurt on the enemy, your opponent. But God wanted them to be dependent on Him. Whether it was 200 against 2,000 or 200,000 or one angel against 200,000, it didn't matter, did it? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. He was. And they didn't want to do it. Doug's saying, so everybody can hear it. Joab didn't even carry out the full command, did he? In First Chronicles, you see the rest of the story there. He didn't even include the Levites or the Benjamites. He didn't include them in the number, and it says why, Joab, because he was put out with David for doing this. So it's pretty interesting about Joab, as kind of a side note. Joab was very close to David, and David accepted his counsel on all matters from what we kind of read. He was very close. Joab, in a way, thought himself, you just consider this, it's just my ideas and my thinking. But Joab, he would do what's best for David even though David didn't agree. You know, he thought himself, Joab, I think, thought that his decision making was a little better than David's. Because he didn't carry out this command. He completely disobeyed, David's commands on different occasions, killing Amasa, Absalom, right? So Joab thought himself a little bit above the king's law and commands in that sense. But they were very close. And it's not that Joab was doing the wrong things when it comes to, technically, the things that Joab did, as we look at it, it's like, Joab was probably right in this. Although I don't know that Joab was seeking God. And inquiring of God, like Jeff said, what David could have done in this whole matter, what could David have done? And he had done so many times before, could have inquired of God about this matter. And God would have, given an answer. Maybe God would have said, yes, it's okay. Maybe he would have said, no, you don't need to know. You need to depend on me. I don't know, I don't know. But David could have done that. But anyway, those were, I'm going to pass through this. These were the thoughts that I had for the end of this. We got a couple more things to do. But why did David need to count? We've kind of gone through that. And David's words, and we're going to see that in 2 Samuel. In fact, we'll do that now. As we've thought about this and discussed it a little bit, let's look at some of the writings of David. Like I said, we're coming toward the end of David's reign and his life, and we're going to be going over to Solomon and his reign real quickly. But we've got a couple of things in chapter 22 in the first part of 23, a song of David. We don't know the chronology of it, of this anyway. We do know of chapter 23. But of chapter 22, we don't really know. It could fit in several different places. And this is a psalm. It could, in my estimation, could very well fit with his other psalms that he wrote. But this is one that's placed here for us. And it's several verses. It's 50 verses. I don't know that we're going to have time to go all the way through it. But look through that. And let's skim through it. And look and think about some of the attitudes that the writer, David, would have in order to pen these things. The characteristics that David would have to have as he writes these things and his attitude. and how he felt toward God. So, in start in verse 2, and I'm not going to read all of this, but just go down through here. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock, in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold and my refuge. My Savior, you save me from violence. I call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. We get a lot of songs out of this passage, actually. You'll recognize several of these. I will call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. I am saved from my enemies. For the waves of death encompassed me. The torrents of destruction overwhelmed me. The cords of Sheol surrounded me. The snares of death confronted me. In my distress, I called upon the Lord. Yes, I cried to God, and from his temple he heard my voice, and my cry for help came in his ears. What are some of the attitudes and characteristics you can think of David that he had to have when he was writing these? A complete trust in God. And this is a time when he was in some distress. You know, his enemies surrounded him. And he's in a bad spot, in a bad way. And what does he realize? He can't do it on his own. He can't. He's totally dependent on God, not self-reliant. He knows he's in trouble. Remember when he was in the land of the Philistines once, right? He was by himself. What did he have to do to kind of get out of that situation? Kind of had to act. You know, yeah, like crazy, like he was, just drooling and, you know, and so forth. And, you know, and they were like, well, he's not much anymore. But, and he fled. He was in flight for so much of his, you know, that early period before he became king, and he was out in the wilderness and hiding and running from Saul and staying away from the enemies. But during that time, I kind of fit this during that time, how much he depended on God when all of his enemies were around him. He recognized God as his Savior, as his deliverer, didn't he? So compare that with what we've just talked about in chapter 24, when he goes and he numbers the Israelites. That's quite the opposite. See, if what we're saying is right, you know, with numbering, you know, seem, you know, is more with perhaps a lack of faith, not depending on God, depending on the numbers. These two things don't look the same, do they? Of what's written here versus what he did. Do we have that happen in our lives? We have ups and downs, don't we? We roller coaster, you know, and have that effect with our faith some, don't we? David's not a perfect man. In different phases of his life, and like I said, I have no idea the time frame of when this happened in chapter 24, but imagine if it was at a time of peace when he had them numbered. When do we tend to rely and totally depend on God and need, and we cry out and we pray for his help? When we're in distress and when we're in trouble and we've got problems. If, and that's a big if, what if it was a time of peace? And David said, let's see how many guys we got. When it's times of peace, everything's, you know, we're not being tested, we're not being, you know, our faith isn't being, you know, tested, and everything seems to be okay. What can happen? I mean, that's what happens to us, right? We get complacent. We start thinking, hey, I got this covered. I got this nailed. So, but can't say that that's the case here by any means, but just as a lesson for us, I know that happens, you know, for me. While we're here, in chapter 23, these are the last words of, and it says it, that these are the last words of David. Now, we're not finished with the period of David here just yet, but we're covering it here. And we'll have one more class on, you know, the kind of the last of David's reign, and then we'll be talking about Solomon. But here in the first seven verses, some more words of David. And we get an idea of his attitude at the end, you know, for his last words. And he says, starting verse 2, and he declares that the Spirit of God is with him, in this. And he says in verse 3, the God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spoke to me, he who rules over men righteously, who rules in the fear of God, is as the light of the morning when the sun rises, a morning without clouds, when the tender grass springs out of the earth through sunshine after rain. Quite poetic and picturesque. Verse 5, truly is not my house so with God? For he has made an everlasting covenant with me, ordered in all things and secured. For all my salvation and all my desire will he not indeed make it grow. But the worthless, every one of them, will be thrust away like thorns, because they cannot be taken in hand. But the man who touches them must be armed with iron and the shaft of a spear, and they will be completely burned with a fire in their place. So, these are the last words of David. In a sense, you know, comparing those, he's got an everlasting covenant with him. Everything's ordered. David feels everything's ordered, everything's secured. You know, everything's done. You know, everything's complete. He says, for all my salvation, all my desire, will he not indeed make it grow, make his house grow? But all of those who are worthless, all of those who are against God, like thorns, and they cannot be taken. The man who will be completely burned, they will be completely burned with fire in their place. So they'll be done away with, in contrast with that. So those are the last words of David. And the only thing I have left is... the thought that I had was, David, for the negative things that we've talked about, and, you know, hindsight is 20/20, and we look back on his life and say, well, why didn't he do this? Why didn't he do that? Somebody did that on my life, that have a whole lot of things. Why didn't he do that? Why didn't he do this? All he had to do was, but when I look at David, you know, man, what a hero. What a spiritual giant he was. What an attitude. What a godly man. A man after God's own heart. You know, part of it, what made me start thinking about this is recently there was a fundraiser and it was a hero day, and some of y'all, I think, went. And I participated to raise money for something, for kids. And I thought about the contrast, you know, all those, I don't know what it was there, Transformers, heroes, Superman, Batman, all those things that we imaginary fiction and we make up. And these are, you know, these are heroes. Well, we make those up, right? We invent that. Here's a man who was a king, who was godly, and what a man he was. He was, and, you know, with the heroes that we manufacture and we imagine, what is it generally about them? We make them macho and transformer large, you know, and huge and, you know, just, you know, all the muscle and all the gadgets or whatever they have that makes them all special. what made David special? It was his heart. It wasn't anything about him physically, but he would go after anything and anyone. Even at the end, toward the end, we'll talk about next week, he goes up against, I think it was a giant, and he's not a young man anymore. And actually, it appears that he falters in it. And Abishai comes and helps him out and kind of finishes off the task. And all his men around him say, look, David, you're not going into battle anymore because you've got to stand here as our light. And we can't extinguish this. We'll talk about that next week. Greg will. David didn't relent from anything. Courageous. You know, a lot of the characteristics we look at for our heroes, man, make him my hero. Make him our kids' heroes. Stand him up. Talk about him for our kids and put him up there as someone. We're out of time, so thank you for your comments. I appreciate it.